You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
And I had your attention. You're all dismissed.
Bankrupt. Better luck with your next job.
I am not a stranger to the dark.
This is not the life I promised you. Not even close.
Because we don't want your broken parts.
Girls, I think I've had an idea.
Look out, because here I come.
T. Barnum, at your service. I'm putting together a show. And I need a star. Every one of us is special. And nobody is like anyone else. That's the point of my show. Ready? Showtime.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. We are in 2018.
Woo-hoo. Whoa. We survived this far. 2012 is now a comedy.
Those Mayans.
Yeah.
Anywho, so this is our first official podcast of 2018, and I am joined by...
Hello, I'm Kate.
And...
Hi, I'm Jordan. You should know who I am.
Yes. And this week we are going to catch up on some 2017 movies we did not go over in the last couple weeks. We're going to go over The Greatest Showman. And then at the end of the podcast, we're going to go through Jumanji. And then either tomorrow or next week, we're going to release a part two of this where we go over The Post, Shape of Water, some of the limited release stuff that's just finally now coming out. But in other words, starting with you, Jordan, what did you think of The Greatest Showman?
I thought it was quite nice. I enjoyed the music a lot. I was quite surprised how well the music was going to go through. I've heard, the guy's name? I have a brain fart.
P.T. Barnum?
No.
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman, sorry. I have a brain fart. I've heard Hugh Jackman sing before, and he's got a great voice. I love his voice. And I knew he was going to lend well to this movie. But just the depth of the music they were able to put through in this film, I was quite surprised with. Also, great choreography, and surprisingly well done for the cinematography as well, with some of the cuts and transitions they did. Me and Jared noticed a lot of those that were very well done, so I was quite surprised. I give it a good thumbs up on that one.
Kate?
Hugh Jackman. He's my Gaston from Broadway. I love him.
Oh, don't say that. Gaston's a terror.
He's an amazing Gaston. His acting is impeccable.
But Gaston in Beauty and the Beast is a terrible person.
Yeah, but like his voice, because I know him from like Broadway. I didn't know him as Wolverine. I knew him as Gaston from Beauty and the Beast way back when. And I knew him from, there was a few other ones that I can't remember. It's like rom-com movies that he's done.
Like Kate and Leopold?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, because I really don't know a lot about P.T. Barnum.
Okay, no one does. That's why the movie is so fancy.
Yeah, and like, it was really cool. And I cried a lot. I was very emotional that day. I got to hold a puppy.
You were holding a puppy during the movie?
No.
Oh, okay.
We were at the mall in that new pet store, and I was just, I don't condone what they do, but the holding a puppy made me very happy. And then going to the movies and it being such a well done movie, I cried. I was very emotional, mind you.
I have to say that the singer that he brings in to go on the tours is totally a home wrecker.
Yeah.
So
I hated her.
Rebecca Ferguson's character?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, Rebecca Ferguson, she, you know, gives, she's a good actress in this too. Like, you know, and she hasn't had a good string of movies lately. She was in The Girl on the with the Train, Girl on the Train.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Life. Mm-hmm. She was in some other. Oh, The Snowman. Or
oh, that movie.
Or as, she was in The Snowman. Oh.
Or as Film Twitter now quotes it as Mr. Police.
Yeah, that movie was pretty terrible.
I've only seen like the beginning of it, and then I got
you're
good, bored.
Then. You're fine. You figured it out.
Yeah, I was bored.
The movie gives you all the clues. Kate, it gave you all the clues.
In the trailer.
Blue's Clues.
But yeah, The Greatest Showman, I don't like it as much as everyone else does, but I don't hate it. I don't hate the movie.
But you don't like it as much as we do.
But yeah, you mentioned Jordan, the cinematography, you mentioned, or I think you brought up the acting.
Yeah.
I thought, and even, you know, this was Michael Gracie's first time directing, and I thought he did an excellent job, especially during the dialogue scenes, during, you know, the one-on-one character interactions, which, look, I know that sounds easy to do, but sometimes it can be very difficult, especially in big movies.
I don't think you developed the characters pretty well. I did feel that a lot of the characters they introduced at the beginning, some of the we'll call them freaks, but the sideshows,
they're
given a lot of character at the beginning, and then they're not really
there.
Messed with. Yeah, they're just kind of background, except for the bearded lady and the Napoleon character midget guy.
And the girl with the trapeze.
Yeah. The character played by Zoe, right? Is it Zoe?
Zendaya.
Sorry. I'm terrible with names.
MJ.
MJ, yeah.
But, like, I can kind of agree with that. I think they try to force that love between Zac Efron and Zendaya's character, and I didn't like that because it just seemed like...
They don't feel like the right ages for each other.
Well, Zendaya's, I think, our age, and then Zac Efron is just, like, a few years older than us.
He's, like, 28.
Yeah, but it's just the way they look on screen, it looks like an adult and a teenager instead of being two young adults.
He's a Disney star, like...
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And he's a Disney star, but he's...
That was a decade ago.
Yeah.
He's much improved since then, I have to give him that.
He's still my Troy Bolton.
He's not mine. He is much improved, and I think he stands by himself in this film, and I appreciate that. I love the interaction when he gets recruited for the circus. That is a great scene, just in the choreography that they did that.
The only problem is you don't need a musical number for that scene, though. You don't really need it. Because it's already established that what's happening in the scene. You know, PT is trying to, you know, get him to do it, and he's contemplating because he wants to do it, but he knows, you know, society is... or his upbringing will kind of denounce him. So you don't really need that musical number to get that across, my opinion.
I disagree. Because it's that transition. Like, I'm trying... It's like with every musical number. You're always trying to figure out the main character trying to recruit another semi-main character. And how do you do it? Through a musical number.
I get that, but... You know,
and the way they executed it was very well done because it was harsh, it was strong, and it was like the music, it went with the beat, and the choreography was amazing.
I get that, but the problem I had with this movie is you don't really need to make this a musical to tell the story.
That is true. It could have been done without the musical part, but I think it lends itself to the musical part.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. I mean, the fantastical element of it, you know, brings out the musical part of it. However, I feel like as a film, it needed either less musical numbers or not have it all, because I got across the same information that I needed from, you know, just two characters talking.
If they did not make it a musical, what this would have been is we bought a zoo and they scratched out zoo and put circus.
Yeah.
That's what it would have been if they didn't make it a musical.
But it's a period piece, which is we bought a zoo, I think, also... I think we bought a zoo still takes in modern time, I think.
But it's the idea of, like, hey, we bought this rundown circus and we're going to bring it back to life. And it's just...
It would have turned into, like, Downton Abbey. Kind of, like, drama and, like, trying to figure something out.
And throwing comedy in there in little spots.
Yeah.
But...
This made it lighter. It made the whole... Yes, there were some serious parts, but it made everything more enjoyable and bearable, because I wouldn't go if it wasn't a musical.
You would, it would have been, for you, it would have been like Water for Elephants or something.
Yeah.
Like
that. It's just something that, like.
I get that. I see that.
Because I don't go see Wolf or Logan just because of the action. I go because it's it's okay, Hugh Jackman. Yeah. But if I go see a musical, I go to hear the different types of music, the choreography, the way the characters interact and stuff. It's just, it would have been completely different if it wasn't the musical.
Fair.
Now, what I find funny is, if I had to compare this film to another one of Hugh Jackman's films, I would not compare it to
Les Miserables.
I always call it Les Miserables. But
just say Les Mis.
Either way. I would not compare it to that one. I'd actually compare it to Australia, the way it's structured and the way it's done.
In the way it's photographed.
In the way it's photographed, because if you look at those two films side by side, he has that same kind of demeanor on how he acts, whereas in a lot of other films that are not X-Men related, he's always either super overacting or underacting. In this film, in Australia, and some of his earlier films, he's a lot more organic. Feels more like a human, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Les Mis, he's like all over the place and being super sad to super happy and just feels weird.
That's the thing with Les Mis, that's how the story is.
Yes, that's how it is. But
even in the books, it's just like he is like really depressed to really angry to really happy. He's just a bipolar.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
But I mean, I understand that's how the story goes, but it just does not lend itself to Hugh Jackman's acting. I mean, I think of all the other actors fit really well in there except for his character. And it's not that he's not a great actor. It's just his acting and that character just don't mesh well.
I don't agree with that. I think he did a wonderful job, because I've seen it.
I agree too. He does a wonderful job in this movie too.
Yeah, he does a wonderful job in most of his movies. There's a few that I don't agree with. X-Men Origins, but
that wasn't his fault.
Was that was terrible writing.
That wasn't his fault.
That was terrible writing and them throwing in Deadpool and messing it all up, and they had to redo that.
No one listened to Hugh, and now everyone listens to Hugh.
Yeah, because he's just kind of like, I told you, motherfuckers. But anyways, it's just, again, I wouldn't have seen this movie if it wasn't a musical. Like, at all, because it kind of, it opens the range and it shows you a completely different style of filming and style of like how to convey a story differently.
That's fair.
Than you would a drama or something else.
That's fair. The only other issue, and then I'll talk more about some of the goods. The only other issue I had with the movie is, you know, there's that This Is Me scene in. The song is actually really good. I will give them that. Like, it deserves
the
nomination.
Scene is that?
This Is Me?
Yes.
The song.
Yes.
Where they are kind of pushed out, and then they go into the circus.
That's the part that I cried.
Vent, you know, their frustrations, you know. And it's a scene that's a little frustrating because it kind of is an embodiment of the whole movie, it's about, the movie wants to be about tolerance, but the whole idea is, they can only bring themselves out in this, you know, circus where everyone can look and gaze or laugh at them. And that's their only, you know, performance. Whereas if the scene would have went, she would have just barged in and with everyone else and sang the song in front of P.T. Barnum and humiliating him, it would have been a much more gravitas scene. But I digress, because I know how, I know that it's not how the movie worked, but that's just a thing I had, is there's certain beats, songs in that, and scenes in that movie where it's just like, it wants to be about this, but it's kind of
straying away from.
Yeah.
I can kind of agree to that, but then again, I disagree. If she didn't, because that's her boss.
Sure.
If, like, for example, if Jordan ever hired me for some reason, and I'm just kind of like, F you, you're an effing idiot, I don't want to work with you anymore, just because you're not presenting me the way that I want to be, you could be his bae, he's going to fire my ass.
Right.
Job.
And I understand that character motivation. It's just a scene where it's like, it's like the movie's word tolerant moment, and I'm doing that in air quotes, but they just go back to where they are to scream and vent to people who...
Well, speaking of character motives, you also got to think about Hugh Jackman's character. he throughout the film is constantly just trying to spite his wife's dad, right?
The rich people.
Rich people. And he's constantly trying to spite him. He doesn't need to do that anymore after he's already met the queen. Like, at that point, I think you've already spited them pretty much because they're never gonna get that chance.
And that is the plot. The kind of arc of Hugh Jackman's character is that he learns to get over his ego.
But that's the problem. Like, if you're a very prideful person, like some people that I know, you're gonna still do whatever the hell you want and make sure you're better than everybody else and still be proving yourself. Nothing, like, there's never enough.
It's you're filling a void that never stops.
And that's your own damn fault if you can't be happy with yourself.
Yeah, and I might have went. So can I ask a question? Because I have a question about the movie. Because I did have to go to the restroom during, like, when they were setting up the circus.
Okay.
How do they get the funding to, for the circus?
Okay, so at the very beginning, I'm not going to try to ruin anything, but you heard in the clip for the listeners where he gets fired, essentially.
Right, yes.
Well, he gets fired because the ships that carry the goods sink.
It sank in China.
He steals basically the deeds to those and uses that as collateral. And it is never mentioned ever again.
Oh, he stole the deeds.
Yeah, he stole the deeds. And it is never mentioned again.
Like, ever.
Ever.
Okay.
Even when everything goes to hell and you're thinking, you know what? The bank would be looking for that collateral. Nope, never mentioned again.
Well, they did repay the collateral. Once you make enough money to pay back, you pay it back in full. And then you're done.
My biggest problem with this, okay, so at the end of the movie, he's basically like, I need more money. And
yeah, because I was confused.
But then I'm just thinking, like, did you not put any into saving? And throughout the whole film, like, there's a bank down the block.
Yeah, this is like Rocky V territory here.
Yeah, where it's like you didn't put any money into saving at any point during your fabulous career.
But that's the reason for Zac Efron's character. Because isn't it, this is based off like a true story, right?
Well, yes, but Zac Efron's character is more of like the marketing department. He's like
he's PR.
PR.
Yeah. But he saved back the money to...
He saved back his own cash.
He saved back his own percentage.
But PT kept investing it into other things and didn't save back any. So he's a terrible businessman.
Exactly. Like, when you're impulsive like that, you're not... Because I can be impulsive sometimes when I'm like, I need this right now, and I have, like, nothing at the end of my paycheck.
But I do... find interesting, like, yeah, all we need is a tent. We can get some real estate down by the docks. It's like, that's fine and dandy. And I know that's how it goes now.
That's how it should have been.
That's how it should have been.
But, like, when, again, like, going into his shoes, you're like, I want to go above and beyond. I want the best of the best. And I don't give a shit what happens or how I get there. It's just put yourself in his shoes and look at the stars.
He wants to be at the Eugene O'Neill Theater when really he can only afford
a tent,
like seven stages or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just okay. Because I had that question because I really, one of the rare times I go to the bathroom, I had to just go, and then I missed that part because I was wondering why did they get evicted? Like, where did all this? It just seemed like it happened. The whole like second act, like beat down, just happened too quickly.
Yeah,
it was basically he stole some deeds to a business that's no longer in business and used his collateral, saying they were his.
Okay, all right.
And he kept making. So Hugh Jackman's character, P.T. Barnum, has like the creation skills of better than anyone I've ever seen because he just grabs random things and builds stuff. I think that should be the real mark, like the real skill he's got going on there, because he just like grabbed.
He's like really smart.
I know, but he just grabbed random stuff off his desk and made one of those spinny zoetrope thing, whatever what they're called.
Zoetropes.
He just made one of those off of random stuff on his desk, and I'm just like, that's not normal.
But the thing is, you make like you're cooking. You're like, I have these ingredients.
That's different.
No, it's not different.
It is
not different because you're still taking your creative side and your imagination and you're making one thing and turning it into something completely different. It's like Kale. He wants to be a filmmaker. He makes all these scenes and all these other different things and create something. It is not different. It's everybody's imaginations and their hard will to actually figure something out. Ha!
But he makes a very specific thing from random things. In a rush, he just goes, what do I have on my desk? Okay, I'm going to build this very specific thing that takes this very, like, I don't know. It does seem to me it was just like, what?
You do the exact same thing when you're cooking.
That's not how that works.
Yes, it does.
I haven't seen you cook enough to make the to argue either way. But anyway, so let's get back to the, you know, I'll go through some more of my, like, good thoughts. I really like the cinematography. I loved how beautifully shot this looked, especially during when they're on the beach.
Oh, yeah. They did color correction. Yay.
Thank God somebody figured out how to do color correction at Fox. And yeah, and you know, I like the acting, you know, I did crap on that scene with Zac Efron and Hugh Jackman when they're trying to talk, when Hugh is trying to talk Zac into being in this movie, I mean, in the circus. And, it helped that Zac Efron had a background in High School Musical. Yeah, it helped because he really does know what he's doing. Like, he has confidence, and he has, and everyone else in this movie does. It's just, you know, sometimes in movies you just get, like, Russell Crowe in Les Mis, who is just like,
I am doing this now, I don't know, is this singing?
Yeah, his scene there was a little rough.
Which one?
Russell Crowe in Les Mis.
Les Mis.
Valjean! Yeah, I know. 2, 4, 6, 0, 1. Yeah, no, he's not a very good singer. I did not like him in Les Mis at all. I think he was a horrible actor in that. Just don't even get me on that.
And Michelle Williams did really well in this movie, even though she's not in it as much. She's not in it that much.
Who did she play?
She plays P.T. Barnum's wife.
Okay, so the younger daughter gets a lot of limelight with the ballerina stuff. The younger daughter just gets thrown to the side and not mentioned much at all.
She's the tree.
Yeah, no.
The joke.
No, I just find it funny because it's like the only time she is referenced is when the daughters are referenced together. It is either the singular daughter or the daughters together. It is never the younger daughter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At any point.
They're just plot devices.
They are plot devices. There's like multiple characters that they reference to. They become a big part for a few minutes, and then they just disappear to the limelight. Like they're gone.
Yeah.
And I understand that's how it works in a lot of movies. I know that, but it gets to the point where you see characters, and at the end of the film, you're like, "Oh yeah, he was in the beginning," and like some of them, they're there throughout the entire film in multiple scenes, and are never once referenced to. They're just there. Like the two guys that are like stuck together. Yeah, they were dancing.
Oh yeah, that's
they're
right.
They're in like maybe a third of the film and they are never referenced to at all. They're just there.
Yeah.
Or like, how did he get elephants? That's another thing that they just go, he has elephants now.
And lions.
And lions.
Honestly, I think I would have liked this. I like the film. I think it's great. I think it gives a lot of real life examples for stuff. But I think it would have been better as a TV show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, that would actually be pretty good.
That way it could, like, explain.
Star Showtime?
Yeah.
And Hugh Jackman's not doing much of anything these days.
Yeah, he's not doing...
Yeah, because he's not doing X-Men anymore. And he's just doing stuff that he enjoys. That's what he said with his wife in an interview. And I would have loved to see this as a TV show as I think about it, because you could go... Like, you can... literally do it as he grows up, like being that Taylor's son and growing up to or meeting his soon to be wife, and like just like one episode of him just growing up, next episode being a teenager going into a grown man and wanting to marry his wife, and like they and like it. Just go episode by each section of his life.
Well, you also have a thing where like it ends with him basically just walking out and being a father. That's fine, but he does stuff at the end, like the actual P.T. Barnum does stuff in the end of his life, past circus. He still funds it. He still deals with it. He makes expansions to it. So like, there's a whole part of the film that we don't get to see. And if you did a TV show of it, then there's a part of it.
Yeah, I would have liked to. I agree with Kate. And even like an FX show or something.
Yeah, like, I don't want to say an FX show. I would think more HBO, Showtime, Stars. No nudity. Okay. If you hear this, HBO or any other.
Oh, there would be so nudity.
No. Maybe Hugh Jackman's butt, but nothing else.
Oh, you gotta think everyone in that circus is fucking. That's what an HBO executive would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately.
But yeah. So with that said, do we have any more thoughts on The Greatest Showman?
I don't. I think it's a great movie. I think everything was executed well. There are some things that I didn't like, but it overrides everything that I did.
I'll say this. It's well executed. It was a genuine well effort. I just didn't like some of the subtextual middle that's in the movie. So I like how I like the package, I should say. I like the package of the film. It's just some of the parts in the middle I was like, you know, it's like an Oreo with like multiple flavor stripes in
it. Oh yeah.
It's like I like some of it. I like the chocolate cookie part, but some of that flavoring stripes that in there, it's just like, ooh, I got the mint.
I just think the part that gave me a bad taste in my mouth was definitely the opera singer parts.
Yeah.
Those just made me all. I mean, I get it that he needed to leave home and lose a bunch of money and stuff like that. And I know that
we have to have a second act.
I know that's what actually happened, but it just feels like they played it up too much, and it just made me feel very uncomfortable because I'm like. The whole time I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, he was sitting next to me like whispering, don't you dare do it. Don't you do it.
I mean, it's both sides because he does kind of lead her on a little bit and she does respond. But it's one of those where it's like you could have made that whole section shorter and left out a lot of the discomfort for viewers.
Well, and also you could have expanded more on the circus part. Which is really what the movie is.
Yeah.
The meat of the movie is the circus, not the... And Rebecca Ferguson, she's great in this movie, but really the heart of the film is... really what people are coming to see is the circus.
It goes from, we need to do something to make money, we get a circus, we hire people, circus is profitable, we become famous, then he runs off with the opera singer, the other guy flirts with the trapeze artist... Circus burns down when he gets back, and then it just ends on them going, oh, well, I have some money. We can start up again. That's it.
Yeah.
And so it's like it feels like if they had focused more on the circus and that last third bit, it would have been a stronger ending because the ending they have just feels like a passing of the torch, and that's it. It's done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like... The way it starts off, it feels very strong. It's very energetic when it starts off. It's got that energy, and it builds up with them growing up. It's so full of life, and then at the very end, it's just like, gonna go be off to be a dad now.
Yep.
And that's how it ends. I'm just like,
well, that's his arc. Is he learns to be a family?
He learns to be a family man. Learns humility and everything like that. But it's just, it feels so disgenuine in that last little bit because it's like, it's your show now, and then he just walks off, and Zach Conference is like, cool, it's mine now. And then, but it's just
it is technically his.
It is now. But it's just like, it just feels so cliche, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a heart to it. Because you know him, you know the moment he recruits him, he's going, that guy's going to take over.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is the script is kind of like predictable.
It's beyond predictable.
Like you can pretty much predict where everything's gonna go, but especially when Rebecca Ferguson just pops right in England. But I will say though, it's still I like I said, I like the package.
It's just a great film.
Some of the goods is not that great.
But like the whole thing is, it's just like we could go home and like watch it again and be okay with watching it again. Yeah, I'd watch it again.
And the soundtrack is really good. Like,
it's great by itself.
They got the people who did La La Land last year, and so of course, This Is Me is gonna create so many tears in people's eyes. It's just yeah, it's a feel good movie. Just yeah, like I said, the package is kind of the goods in the package is just sort of problematic. So with that said, I think we're gonna take a little break. But Jordan, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at jhoodfilm, and you can find my website at KHZ Productions. And obviously, you're listening to KHZ Productions right now on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you're listening to. And if you're listening to us, please go give us 5 stars, give us a great review. We love to hear from it. It helps us out so much, and we're trying to get funding for advertisers so that way we can make more money, do better productions, because some of us are about to graduate. So please give us a good review. It helps us so much.
And if you don't feel like you can give us 5-star reviews, tell us how we can get 5-star
reviews.
Yes,
tell us how we can
improve. Jordan, do you have interviews or stuff coming up?
I do. So they're not going to be starting as I record them, but starting next week, I'm going to start interviewing filmmakers, producers, writers, actors from this area, North Georgia. And if you're outside of North Georgia and you're interested and you're a filmmaker, shoot me a message. You can find all my contact information on khcproductions.com. And I'll interview you, and we can do something like that. But I want to interview these people and talk to them about the film industry and have an inside-out look while you're doing an outside-in look. And so you have both sides of the coin. And so I'm going to start that up soon, and you guys should keep an eye out for that.
Great. All right. And with that said, we're going to take a break. We're going to say goodbye to Jordan, but we're going to be back in just a few seconds, everybody.
Ow. Where's the rest of me?
Oh my God. Fridge?
Yeah, I'm Fridge. Who are you?
It's me, Spencer.
Who is she?
Martha?
Why am I wearing half a shirt and short shorts in the jungle?
I think we got sucked into Jumanji and we become the avatars we chose.
So that means
Bethany?
Oh, wait, Bethany?
Don't look at it!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man.
Well, I don't have my Claritin, and all I see around here is pollen.
Well, I don't have the top 2 feet of my body.
Damn, that is a man right there. Don't cry, don't cry.
Welcome back, Youth Critic listeners. We are now with Kate again, and we are going to be talking Jumanji. Welcome to the jungle.
Yeah, what's up?
Okay, for the record, I actually really like this movie. Kate, what about you?
Okay, here's the thing. I went in there wanting to feel nostalgic. I left.
You had the member berries and
yes,
nostalgia glasses.
Yes, that's what I wanted.
Remember Robin Williams? Remember Bonnie Hunt?
And I understand that they were trying to keep to his memory. Rest in peace, Robin Williams. But I liked it, but it's not the same.
Yeah, here's the thing about this movie. And I say this as someone who really likes it. You know, the first movie, or the first Jumanji film back in the 90s, with Robin Williams, Kristen Dunst, Bonnie Hunt. I don't know who that other kid is. But
that Jonas? Oh, no.
No, in the original movie.
Oh,
I don't know what his name is.
I can't remember his name.
But
I know it's Peter.
Yeah. But the thing is, that movie was, you know, it was like a realist, I'm doing this in air quotes, realistic take on, like, what would happen if this game existed. Like, it took itself seriously. It was like a, you know, adult drama. It was Robin Williams trying to channel, like, the PTSD of living inside this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, while also being this kind of terrifying adventure with, you know, someone hunting them, there's, you know, a stampede, there's, you know, like one of the kids kind of turns into a monkey. It's an odd, it is kind of how not kids' movies should be, I argue.
Yeah, that's what makes it so great.
Because it's, you know, something for the adults, you know, something the adults can get into. While also, you know, it kind of, you know, pushes the kids, you know, into thinking, you know, because the movie at times, you know, I saw the movie at like 5 and I was a little terrified of it. But I kind of look back at that more because it stands out. Like, it stands out as a film that, you know, I liked. And I haven't seen the movie in a couple of years, but I think when I rewatched it, a couple of years back, I still thought it was an enjoyable movie. Some of the effects didn't hold up, but that's because, you know,
it's mid-90s. It's time.
Yeah.
Like, I was a very obsessive child. I watched Jaws all the time. I watched Jurassic Park. Great. And another movie that I watched are Drop Dead Fred and Jumanji. Those are the four movies I watched as a kid all the time. If it wasn't Disney, it was one of those four movies.
That's how I was, except I would throw in Jurassic Park in the Batman movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of like I would watch Jumanji over and over and over and over to the point where my mom was just like, I'm done. She's like, yeah. We're putting on something else.
The blockbuster bill was outrageous.
Yes, it was. I was very upset with blockbuster.
Ask your parents, kids, what blockbuster is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so going into this movie, and I had the same issue with the recent Goosebumps movie as well. It's really neutered. Like, these movies are kind of neutered.
Yeah.
I hate
Nobody wants to offend anybody.
Well, it's not necessarily offend. It's that there's nothing memorable or there's nothing to, you know, the appeal to Goosebumps for us as kids. I don't know if you watched it, the show.
I did.
But the appeal to the show was it was a horror show for kids. It was like Tales from the Crypt for kids or Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
When you look back, it's kind of odd to think how anyone could be scary, but
A kid, that's terrifying.
Yeah, because you're looking at kids, you know, facing situations in peril, and in Goosebumps, we're watching a bunch of 20-year-olds in peril, and in Jumanji, we're watching a bunch of...
Teenagers turn adults, and like...
And they're in peril.
It's just... I like the idea that it's turning into a video game, but it did not have the same side effects as the original. Like, in a video game, there's different ways that you can go through the game. Yes, I like the different levels, but there was no consequences unless you're losing a life. Like, instead of losing a life, you can grow a tail like a monkey. Or you can turn into a monkey if you did the wrong thing or drank the wrong
potion. There's not that at all. Or cheating. No one cheats in this movie.
It's just very cutthroat. Like, okay, we have to get through this game. And this is how we do it. And it's just kind of like that doesn't hit home for me. Like, again, Robin Williams sitting in front of the fire with his almost then girlfriend and bats flying out and him going into the game. And that to me was more realistic than this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. We know children will be terrified, and we know parents don't like having kids with nightmares, but you remember it as a kid. You remember those stories. You remember, you know, being terrified. You remember being thrilled by the movies like Jumanji and Jurassic Park. You remember those. And while they were probably too intense for, you know, a 5-year-old, I don't know how old were you when you were watching Jumanji?
4.
Okay, for a 4- and 5-year-old. But we still remember those movies. We remember those more than Jungle to Jungle or...
George of the Jungle.
Yeah, that.
Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, that too. We remember Jumanji and, you know, other movies like it because...
It's relatable and you can, like, enjoy watching it.
And it's fun. It's fun, you know, as a kid to be terrified. It's not... fun as a parent to have a kid terrified, but it's fun in hindsight to be terrified. There's the experience of, you know, a feeling, you know, emotionally, you know, attached to something, and then, you know, there's the thrill of it. So what Sony is doing with our beloved 90s properties, not Goosebumps and Jumanji, and now they're going to do something with He-Man. I know He-Man is 80s, but we'll just play with that. We'll just pretend for a second it's 90s. But you kind of are just like, I just want, you know,
I want original content.
Yeah, that, and I want a thrill out of, you know, stuff I felt nostalgic for. And
but also the problem is like, we both know films. Like, right. I went with 10 people, my entire family. And
I went by myself.
They came out, and they absolutely loved it. And I was the sourpuss. I was like, I hated it. I did not enjoy it at all. They're like, what's wrong? Why didn't you like it? I'm like, it didn't have original content. It played off of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart way too much. Yes, they're a good pair together, but we get it.
I don't think they are. That's my thing. I don't ever... Well, in Central Intelligence, I didn't think they were because they were trying too hard to switch the roles. Which, look, Dwayne The Rock Johnson can do anything. Like, I think he can... If someone gave him the chance to do an Oscar-worthy role, I think he could do it. Yeah. I honest to God think he can do it.
Yeah. But it's just like Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart.
He's a good comedian, but he's just, no. I'm done with him. He's been in so many things already.
Yeah, well, and also, Kevin Hart... Really, I mean, and bless him, he really does try in a lot of stuff. He tries to be the straight man. The problem is the Kevin Hartness of him kind of just comes out.
Yeah.
It just always comes out somehow organically, and when it is trying to be contained, it doesn't feel organic, and that's kind of the problem with Kevin Hart. That's why the team up is kind of a weird combination, but Dwayne Rock Johnson's always baller in a lot of stuff he's in.
Yeah, I will. He's funny. He's charming. He's very, like, he's good with everything. It's just this movie. I'm glad they didn't take the same formula they did for Jumanji and added it to this movie. I'm glad they changed the formula a little bit. Mm-hmm. But still, it's too much comedy. Jumanji was a drama. Like, it had comedic aspects to it, but it was a drama.
Yeah, and...
It's like action and drama.
Mm-hmm.
With a bit of dark humor.
Yeah. But with all that said, I think I like the movie more than you. Yeah. I really do.
I'm a little salty when it comes to my favorite things, and Jumanji's one of them, especially with Robin Williams. And I don't like that being changed. I didn't want a remake or a sequel or whatever they're calling this. I didn't want it.
It's a reboot / sequel. Like, I wouldn't argue. Like, I'm highly anticipating Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle 2.
I'm not.
Like, I'm waiting for the announcement, I mean.
Cut the umbilical cord and just leave it alone.
Let's see what happened on Zathura. I mean, and also, there's plenty of Chris Van Allsburg books that needs to be adapted.
Yeah.
The Witch's Broom, you know. I can't remember, there's one about the figs. I can't remember the title of it. But if you put, like, Tom Hanks or Paul Giamatti in that movie, it's the dentist who eats figs and has weird dreams that come to life, then yeah, that would be a kick-ass movie. But the reason why I really like this movie is Dwayne Rock Johnson is great, but also the real MVP of this movie is Jack Black as the avatar of a teenage girl. A teenage girl avatar. So
I will say that is very funny. That was probably one of the best things that I will say about this
film. It's a committed performance. Like, and you feel and you believe it. Like, it's not like he's playing off of stereotypes of a I don't know, 15-year-old girl. Yeah. But
I just can't even with this place.
Yeah, you just buy it. Like, you buy the manner. He has the mannerisms down. It's like he went into, and this is, I know this sounds creepy, he actually went to a high school to study how girls talk.
Yeah, especially now. They sound very illiterate.
Yeah, well, they...
I can't even with this place.
You just type everything.
Yeah, you just, like, type, and I'm like, call me. Don't text me from, like, right across from me. Actually call me, or, like, actually put down your phone and have a conversation with me.
We just dated ourselves so much.
I just...
But yeah, I get where you're saying. But yeah, he totally gets it. And his scenes with Karen Gillan about how to do a sexy walk, how to, you know, seduce women. I mean, it's all hilarious. It's really not only hilarious, but just well written, well acted, even from Karen Gillan. Like, and also she's an MVP too. She's the other kind of, you know, shy, awkward, you know, teenage girl that's in the body of 6 foot Karen, or 5'11 Karen Gillan. And yeah, they play with the tropes, and they play with, you know, the tropes that are in 90s video games like Tomb Raider. I mean, Tomb Raider has, you know, that outfit or a similar outfit to what she's wearing.
I know.
And yeah, and they do call out, like, why am I in, you know, where are my clothes?
Like, where's the rest of my clothes?
I think the movie is well written, but yeah, I think it is.
It's not the same.
It doesn't have to be the same as The Last Jedi taught us.
Yeah.
It can just rhyme.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they tried so hard to make that connection. Like, the whole hut thing.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. With Alan Pierce.
Yeah, and I'm like, no. Just stop. If you're going to make this an original, make it original.
Make it its own thing, yeah. Yeah, I'll
unless
admit.
You're going to completely, like, bring back the original brother and sister from the first movie and put it in this movie. If not, leave it alone.
I would like to see Kirsten. I would love to see Kirsten Dunst in this movie.
I would have, too.
Or Kristen Dunst, whatever her name is.
Kristen Dunst.
Yeah. Great actress, by the way. Anyway.
It's just...
Yeah.
I love Robin Williams. Like, he is probably one of the greatest comedians and actors this world has ever seen or known.
Uh-huh.
And it's like kind of sad that I will have to show my children one day this movie and Aladdin and Good Will Hunting.
Oh, by the way, Aladdin's getting a remake.
I know. I'm so excited.
But is Will it? Smith is playing.
I know. I'm not happy about that. I'm just... can't they just take...
In a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah. But, like, I get to show my kids all these movies that I grew up with, and they're either going to love it like I did, or they're going to completely hate it and want to watch the next greatest thing that's on TV right now.
Also, I feel this movie's more inappropriate than the original movie.
It is.
There is so much penis talk.
I will admit, that was probably a very funny part.
I mean, it's a funny scene. It's just like, I'm sitting in this auditorium full of kids and parents, and I'm like, you know, you have those moments where you're sitting in the auditorium with kids and parents and kids' movie, and they just bring up, you know,
dick jokes.
Whatnot. And you're just like, oh, God.
Don't forget to shake it. I had to bring that one up.
You're just sitting there. Yeah, well, I mean, you just sit there going, oh, God, what's going to be the reaction here?
Don't forget to shake it.
Oh, God.
But, like, I'm just going to say that to all my guy friends and see if they know what I'm talking about. And
Kate, don't do it.
Why not?
No, that could go horribly wrong.
Oh, okay. They're either going to shake their... The guys that I know, they're either going to shake their butt or look at me like I'm totally weird. You know that's true. You'd probably be the only one who would know what I'm talking about.
That's probably fair. Okay, yeah. That's fair. But still, be careful.
I will.
Anywho, also, other MVP I have to mention is Nick Jonas. And the reason why I bring him up is because they're doing that Uncharted movie.
Yeah.
With Tom Holland. And I'm like, if Tom Holland just gets too busy doing Spider-Man shit, why don't we get Nick Jonas to play a young Nathan Drake?
Whatever happened to his brothers?
Well, one's married and has a kid, and then I think the other one still does music.
The other one's, like, getting married to the girl who plays Sansa from Game of Thrones.
Oh, is that... really?
Yeah, Joe Jonas.
I did not know this.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, like... 3 months ago.
Okay, I don't keep up with the Jonas Brothers. I just hear.
And the kid from Spy Kids, that the little boy, is getting married to Meghan Trainor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's she again?
All about that bass. About that bass. No trouble. That girl? She's a singer.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Blonde.
I think, okay, we'll just pretend I know. Anyway, but yeah, so I think the acting all around was really good, and I bring up, and the reason why I brought Nick Jonas up is because he has that charisma, and he has that, you know...
He's just a funny guy.
Yeah, he just has...
His comedic parts were way more funny than Kevin Hart's and The Rock.
I mean, look, it is kind of dark, like comedic that you tell Kevin Hart you're playing the avatar of a kid who's like 7 feet tall. Like, that is pretty funny.
What?
When you're telling Kevin Hart that you're playing
your teenage self
is like 7 feet tall. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
I will admit.
Where's the rest of me?
And he does the best he can.
Again, trying too hard.
But everyone else is like naturally like organic.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Overall, I think this was a good movie. It's just not something that I would want to sit down and watch again, unless somebody else hasn't seen it, and then we can trash it together.
I might watch it again just to make sure I wasn't crazy, because I was going in with like zero expectations on this movie. Because, like I said, I was very disappointed. I don't hate the Goosebumps movie, also starring Jack Black. I just was disappointed for the reasons you're disappointed in Jumanji, in that it just doesn't ring true. It doesn't ring true to what we know of Goosebumps.
Yeah, but the whole thing with Jack Black, I think he kind of helped make the movie better for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, in both movies.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like this incredibly a lot more, and I liked that they were just like, fuck it, we're going to have dick jokes. And we're going to, even if it made me feel uncomfortable sitting in a room full of 5-year-olds and parents. I kind of like, you know, where everything kind of fell into place. So it's a fun movie. Not the greatest, but it's a fun, fun. Nicely written movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. The writers of this are actually writing the new Venom movie, so.
Oh, they are? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Jeff Minkner and Scott Rosenberg also are writing the upcoming Venom, so we'll see how this goes.
Very exciting.
All right, so with that said, I think we can end the show. Kate, where can people find you?
Around campus.
Oh,
I am everywhere.
She is everywhere.
Yeah, you can also find me on Snapchat. That's where I post more. It's pkate443, I think.
Is this your Instagram?
No, this is my Snapchat.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little more flexible with my Snapchat because everything goes away within 10 seconds. Yeah, pkate443 is my Snapchat. You can also find me on the KHZ Network and production.
You're a PR agent.
I am. I don't know how.
She's amazing at it.
Thank you. I don't know how I got it. I guess dating the guy who owns the company helps. I know a little bit.
It's your area of expertise anyway. So
yeah, that's what I'm going for school for.
So yeah, that helps. It's not like, you know. It's not like you're just in a completely different program and you got this job.
Yeah. I love my job.
It's cool. But yeah. And you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. And you can also follow this podcast on Twitter at The Youth Critic. You can also find the channel that distributes this podcast, KG Network, at KG Network. And I think tomorrow we're going to have part two of limited releases for like The Shape of Water, The Post, Phantom Thread. I think we might try to squeeze in Call Me By Your Name. It's just we got, you know, we're already kind of busy with, you know, three. We'll be talking a lot about these three other three movies, so we'll see what we can do. We're just going to just jump around some of the limited release stuff that's finally coming here to Georgia, you know, tonight and tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. Also, next week, we're going to do the Best of 2017 episode. And that episode will also include our most anticipated movie of this year. Kate, before I let you go, what are you looking forward to the most in 2018?
Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Perfect. perfect. And, yeah, and we'll be discussing that. And then I think finally, 2 weeks from now, we'll finally get to 2018 stuff. We'll just have a whole podcast reviewing some of the stuff we saw in January, or in this month. So with that said, thanks everybody for sticking with us for 2.5 years. Kate, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Jordan, I know you're not here, but thank you for being on the podcast. We'll be back with everyone in a day or two.
The haters always say, Tanya, tell the truth. Tanya. There's no such thing as truth. Everyone has their own truth. I was the best figure skater in the world at one point in time.
Call that a clean skate, for Christ's sake?
Do not swear in front of the kids.
I didn't swear, you cunt.
Who's that?
You two fuck yet? We need to see a wholesome American family.
I don't have a wholesome American family.
You skated like a graceless bull dyke. I was embarrassed for you.
My entire life, I've been told I wouldn't amount to anything. You know what? Maybe I would.